From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
With tensions mounting between the West and Russia, both sides have placed their military assets closer to the Russian border. Last week, a new NATO European missile defense system went online in Romania, increasing tensions with Moscow. CCTV's Kevin Osbeck reports from Brussels.
Two U.S. F-22 fighter aircraft are now based in Romania. It's a clear message to Moscow.
These aircraft and the 220 airmen with them from the 95th Fighter Squadron are here to assure our allies, deter aggression, and destabilize the security, and highlight our steadfast commitment to NATO.
Romania is also where NATO recently built a new European missile defense system. Another one is being built in Poland. But despite the hardware of war lining up along the edge of Europe, analysts say there's no need to fear a new Cold War.
The West and Russia have mutual interests. Think about non-proliferation, think about the fight against terrorism, think even about Syria.
The next NATO summit takes place in Warsaw in July. At that summit, we'll see if NATO decides to further increase its presence in Eastern Europe, close to Russia's border. Kevin Osbeck, CCTV, Brussels.
Meanwhile, Moscow submitted evidence to the UN Security Council earlier this week that arms and military hardware are being supplied illegally by NATO member Turkey to ISIS in Syria. Russia's UN envoy Vitaly Churkin said the delivery of the supplies were being supervised by Turkish intelligence. Churkin wrote to the council, quote, "The main supplier of weapons and military equipment to ISIS fighters is Turkey, which is doing so through non-governmental organizations. Work in this area is being overseen by the National Intelligence Organization of Turkey," closed quote. He added the transportation of the arms involved vehicles that were part of some humanitarian aid convoys. In late 2015, the Russian military released evidence including satellite images of columns of oil tanker trucks moving into Turkey from the areas controlled by ISIS in Syria. Calls have intensified for an international investigation into Turkey's links with the Islamic State, following RT's reports implicating Ankara in ISIS's illegal oil trade and the smuggling of looted antiquities. Since the start of the Syrian conflict in 2011, Turkey has been the main transit route for foreign recruits joining ISIS, al-Nusra Front, and other terror groups in its neighboring state, with reports suggesting the militants were allowed to cross the border unimpeded. The role of at least two U.S. allies, NATO member Turkey and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, in the support of terrorist groups inside Syria has come under increased international scrutiny at a time that U.S. policy towards Syria has become increasingly difficult to ascertain. However, the role of the Saudis in particular and the relationship of the U.S. to that role may face further scrutiny if a missing piece of the congressional record regarding the September 11th attacks finds the light of day, as seems possible, over the next few weeks. Les Jamieson is an activist who is spearheading a grassroots effort to release 28 pages redacted from the Congressional Joint Inquiry on 9/11. The missing 28 pages allegedly reveal the details of Saudi financing in support of that attack and the growth of ISIS. We spoke with him via Skype from New York Monday.
Right after the attacks of 9/11, the intelligence committees in the House and the Senate got together to put together an investigation and issued a report. This is called the Congressional Joint Inquiry on 9/11. Now, again, this is prior to the 9/11 Commission, which most people know about. This initial investigation is not very well known. And they put together an 836-page report on their analysis of 9/11. And again, it's the House Intelligence Committee and the Senate Intelligence Committee. They have about, around a dozen members on each, and they're bipartisan. So when they submitted this 836-page report to the Bush White House in late 2002, the Bush White House reviewed the entire document and decided to declassify an entire chapter. They actually removed it from the report, and it was a 28-page chapter focusing on evidence of funding, mostly, of a couple of the accused hijackers. And according to the people like Senator Bob Graham and Dick Shelby and a few others involved, and also others who have read the 28 pages, it actually names Saudi monarchs from the Saudi royal family. And they also intimate that it reflects on certain other Middle East countries and sort of collusion, an involvement from certain U.S. agencies. Now, it's classified. There's been an effort ever since, by the way, to get this chapter declassified for this main reason. Initially, there's nothing in there that would jeopardize national security. That's the only reason why anything should be classified. We're supposed to be living in a functional democracy that upholds the principle of transparency in government. And so then everybody should question and is questioning, well, why was it classified then in the first place? Well, George W. Bush was the one who did it. And remember that 140 Saudi nationals, including several bin Laden family members, were evacuated in the days after 9/11 when no one else could fly. And we know that the Bush family has a decades-long business and close family relationship with the Saudi royals. So that's where we start to look and question, and it broadens from there. So that's a bit of the essence there. And folks, HR14.org has background and more, HR14.org. Now, to come back to your question of what's going on now.
Oh, hold on. Let me just give people a little historical context, okay, too. When you had the report come out, it was an interesting sort of tide, ebb and flow that was going on in the Congress in terms of the majorities, particularly in the Senate. At the beginning of 2001, the Democrats ended up in control of the Senate. You had Al Gore with a tie-breaking vote until he left office on the 20th. Then Dick Cheney was the tie-breaking vote up until June, when James Jeffords, who was a senator from Vermont, switched from a Republican to an independent and caucused with the Democrats. So from June 2001 forward, you have a Democratic majority in the Senate. And then the death of Paul Wellstone in October. He was replaced in November by an independent who didn't caucus with either party. And so you then had a split, and the Republicans, of course, had control of the House the entire time.
Right. And in that time period, it's very important to remember that just after 9/11, in the days and weeks after, here's what the atmosphere was. Okay, here's what the conditions were within government, within the country. In the days after 9/11, George Bush decreed these words. He said, "Let us not tolerate any outrageous conspiracy theories." And then he says, "You're either with us or you're with the terrorists."
Right. Let me just now remind people, what was the makeup again of the people who were involved, officially designated as being involved in the attacks on September 11, 2001, by nationality?
Right. Out of the 19, 15 were Saudi nationals. two Egyptians, I think one from United Arab Emirates, and 15 of them were definitely Saudis. And what's very significant in this whole unwrap the issue of the 28 pages is that there's a trail of evidence leading to Saudi support network here within the U.S. And that Saudi support network, now here's a big thing, there's a struggle going on, that has been going on, where the FBI has been trying to suppress everything about this Saudi support network, because the underlying evidence will show that these people were Saudi agents in collusion with the FBI. It's like handlers. If you've ever studied any of these sting operations where they have, quote, some Muslim radicals here within the country getting ready to stage some kind of a plot, and they catch them just in time, they pull the sting operation. Well, there's always an FBI informant in there. So this is what could unravel. And the FBI said, for instance, for years and years, that they had no information about a wealthy Saudi couple in Sarasota, Florida, that fled at a moment's notice just a couple of weeks before 9/11. It was known that a few of the alleged hijackers visited them. Okay. Well, the FBI has been saying all these years they had no knowledge, no information on. Well, a FOIA request, a FOIA litigation case in Florida forced the FBI to divulge that they had 86,000 pages of documents on that couple and in their activities. So this is high stakes intrigue here going on. And then we get into the component here with, you know, the Saudi royals. You know, they're very powerful. Well, they're basically oil billionaires, and they have a decades-long set of, well, covert relationships in with the U.S. in that they participated with the creation of the Mujahideen back in 1979, 1980. Then they also were role players in money laundering operations during Iran-Contra, and then also in the BCCI scandal, the banking scandal, which was uncovered as a CIA money laundering operation, and we have Prince Bandar, in particular, you know, all through this, and we know Prince Bandar is like almost a family member of the Bush clan, so that's a little bit of the backdrop there. Now I'll fill in the dots here for you, Don, because things have definitely been gradually building with incredible momentum since December. Then in late March, one of the Jersey widows by the name of Kristen Breitweiser, and the Jersey girls or Jersey widows are four women from New Jersey who lost their husbands, who were very much responsible for the creation of the 9/11 Commission in the first place. Okay, there was not going to be any public investigation, right? Until the lobbying of the Jersey girls and several other family members. So, in late March or early April, Kristen Breitweiser wrote an article. It was published in Huffington Post, absolutely hard-hitting and scathing about the suppression of the 28 pages, also suppression of a companion bill in the Senate that would lift what's called diplomatic immunity that the Saudis have been hiding behind in a legal case against them with 9/11 families, up to 6,000 9/11 family members participating in a huge lawsuit against several members of the Saudi royal family and officials and organizations. So she wrote this article, came out in Huffington Post. It's called Obama of Arabia. And we have it linked at HR14.org in the resource section. So then April 10th, of all places, the CBS News show 60 Minutes aired an entire segment all about the issue of the 28 pages and the Saudi connection to 9/11. And it interviewed former Senator Bob Graham, also interviewed three members of the 9/11 Commission, Bob Kerry, Tim Romer, and John Lehman. We have a link at HR14.org. Bob Graham and others make the case, yes, there was nothing in there to compromise national security. There's evidence of a wider support network, and that there's no way these guys, these 19 young Arabs, could have pulled this off alone on the 9/11 operation, which has been the national narrative ever since, right?
So, yeah, it was also done, by the way. It was, you know, that was essentially the casus belli for the attack on Iraq that took place in 2003. And for people to remember, the Iraq War in 2000-2001, one of the big enablers of that was the alleged threat by Saddam Hussein to Saudi Arabia. That was a big part of it, that Saudi Arabia could go the way of Kuwait.
Yeah, and the Iraq invasion, you know, it's just a shocker. It's starting to finally really come out in public in that how on the day of 9/11, I read, and this is documented, Paul Wolfowitz, goes into the White House later in that day in the afternoon when they all met, said, you know, now would be a good time to go after Iraq.
Right.
And right then from there, Rumsfeld was hitting on the CIA saying, go massive, find something on Iraq right. to connect. And they tried to connect Mohammed Atta to a meeting with Saddam Hussein. And guess what? The evidence was quickly refuted. You have to really understand how 9/11 was used as to underscore this monumental lie for the invasion of Iraq, just to show the way this was their new Pearl Harbor, as is indicated in the document by Project for New American Century, in which they actually said that in order to create the conditions for a geopolitical stance where we exhibit full spectrum dominance, it could only happen, or it would not happen, absent a catastrophic catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. Right. That's the PNAC document. So that was issued 1 year before 9/11. Right. So this all has the potential to unravel now, Don. And so April 10th, 60 Minutes comes out with this incredible expose on the 28 pages. And right away, there was such an incredible flood of mainstream news coverage on this issue of 20, you know, just Google 28 pages Saudis and you'll find in, you know, coverage from at the highest levels. Now we have within a day or two of the April 10th 60 Minutes news program, the White House contacted Senator Bob Graham, former senator in Florida, to tell him that declassification is underway, or meaning the review to declassify is underway. Now, what's important to know is that, first of all, President Obama has been promising 9/11 family members since 2008 that he would release 28 pages on three separate occasions. He made this promise. Then we learned that in 2014, he said it's the review is underway. The summer of 2014, meaning the Office of the National Defense Intelligence Director, which is James Clapper, who he's another character that you know, he is known to have perjured himself regarding a statement about Iran, and so. James Clapper is reviewing the 28 pages now, presently, and there's going to be a meeting next Tuesday. Now, here's the action alert I want to share with your audience. May 17th, Senator Bob Graham and Congressman Walter Jones, who is the initiator of the House resolution to declassify the 28 pages, they're going to meet with James Clapper. So what we're urging thousands of people to do is call the White House switchboard, the office of James Clapper, and the offices of the House Intelligence Committees. And I have complete instructions with the phone numbers at hr14.org. Right there on the homepage, you'll see a red box. It's right there. And just click the link. All the details are there. And the basically, the talking point is this. We, the people, demand full disclosure of the 28 pages. Not a portion. Full disclosure. That's it. And it's an incredible opportunity. It's an unprecedented opportunity for people who are either, you know, 9/11 activists from all backgrounds, as well as peace activists, anti-war activists, all progressive activists who value transparency in government, which is the core one of the core issues here, should get behind this and participate. And what's going to come out eventually, this whole rationale for the global war on terror is going to be shown to be a complete fraud, because funding of these insurgent groups over there in the Middle East that are destabilizing everything in Iraq and Syria, especially. The funding has continued since 9/11, coming from the, mostly Saudi sources.
Right.
And so the dichotomy here, the paradox is the U.S. policy through classifying that information back in 2002 has allowed that funding mechanism to continue all these years. And so here now today, we're supposed to be in mortal fear of getting attacked by ISIS, right? That's what we're right. In mortal fear of another 9/11 style attack here. Yet the funding and aiding and abetting of these extremist groups has been protected by U.S. policy.
And the funding has been from the Saudis. You know, what's interesting is, particularly looking at the district court judge, George Daniels here in New York, yes. You have both his invocation of sovereign immunity in the suit against the Saudis, who were primarily responsible for carrying out and funding the attack, and yet the opening of Iran absent sovereign immunity to a $10 billion default judgment because one or two of the hijackers happened to stop in Iran for 10 minutes on their way to somewhere else prior to 9/11. Somehow, Iran is culpable and Saudi Arabia is not.
That is a very, very important data point that you strike on there. It's a complete contradiction, and the 9/11 families are pointing this out, and others, and this is what we have here. So how can that be explained? We have to really delve into this. What is going on with the U.S.-Saudi relationship that we would protect them? And now the Obama administration is actually lobbying against a Senate bill called JASTA, which stands for Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act. And this is a very narrowly defined bill which would open any foreign country known to be responsible for a terrorist attack on U.S. soil resulting in American deaths. Mm. Would open them to litigation.
Right.
This is all the 9/11 families are asking for. And now the reason given that the Obama administration is opposing and actually lobbying against it, and this was explained in an interview with Charlie Rose interviewing Obama himself. We can't allow this diplomatic immunity to be raised because it would in turn open up U.S. citizens and military personnel to
and
prosecution. From all these other countries.
Right, for terrorist attacks. Right. In other words, if we try you for terrorism, you could try us for terrorism.
Exactly. And, I mean, just contemplate the significance of that.
Yeah, look at the on-the-ground facts in Syria right now. You have the United States, Saudi Arabia, and ISIS all on the same side. Okay, the U.S. says it's they're fighting ISIS, but they're all fighting the Syrian government. And you have Iran and Hezbollah. And Russia on the other side, none of whom were involved in 9/11, despite the pronouncements of a judge in a default case in New York District Court.
Right. So, yeah, that gets into the geopolitics there of the Middle East, where you have, the Russia behind Iran and Syria, which, as I understand it, that's the Shia
the
component
Shia,
of this battle for hegemony. And also behind this battle, Don, is the fact that the Saudi monarchy is this mega rich family that rules by dictatorship, brutal dictatorship in the region. And they know that there are forces there in and around their country that want to see them toppled. And so they are struggling for their survival and for years. And part of this has been a sort of pact or a protection racket with the Wahhabi leaders, the Muslim Wahhabi clerics within the Saudi Arabia.
Right.
It's like the Saudi royals fund the Wahhabis and their madrasas and civic organizations there, right?
And around the world, yeah.
Yeah, around the world. And for that, in return, the Wahhabis allow the Saudi royals to continue their monarchy.
Right.
That's in essence. That's yeah. it. So
with the United States as a partner, apparently.
Pardon me?
With the U.S. as a partner, apparently.
With the U.S. and the CIA definitely as a partner. And it's very important as part of this history regarding the CIA to know the information provided by whistleblower J. Michael Springman, who worked in the U.S. consulate in Saudi Arabia in the late 70s and early 80s, where he was being pressured to issue visas to these young Saudi men by the hundreds, and I believe numbered in the thousands altogether, and without them having to verify their identities in the normal procedure to obtain a visa. And he, J. Michael Springman, protested this, and he was told by the higher-ups within the State Department, no, just don't worry, stop asking questions, do your job, leave it alone, and just issue the visas. And this was known as, quote, the Visa Express. And he later came to find out that these Saudi nationals were being recruited to go fight in Afghanistan in the Mujahideen. And then later years, these same mercenary forces were showing up in Bosnia. And then these mercenary forces continued and wound up in Syria as part of the actions there, and along with probably the mercenaries from Afghanistan and Iraq. So he wrote about this in his book called Visas for Al-Qaeda.
Right.
You really want to understand this.
Yeah, so, because Al-Qaeda essentially was the successor in interest to the Mujahideen. Much of the leadership, including Osama bin Laden, came out of that U.S.-directed effort.
Exactly, exactly. And it's U.S.-directed and CIA, monitored and trained and funded. So and Saudi-funded, absolutely. So, you know, here we are. With this destabilization throughout the Middle East, we have an outcome of it being this incredible, unprecedented level of refugees coming out of Syria, which is, I think, the most serious refugee crisis actually since World War II.
That's right.
And this is all part of the destabilization that we're seeing throughout the Middle East, and the Saudis are an integral catalyst behind what we're watching here. In the U.S., just sold Saudi Arabia $100 billion worth of military weaponry in the past several years.
And they have the Saudi military budget, by the way, is larger than that of Russia, who is supposedly the most serious threat facing the United States. Maybe give us again the website, and we'll pick it up from here when we get closer to the 17th.
Very good, very good. It's HR14.org, has all the material there, and the current action alert. And remember that we're expecting a decision in June regarding the release of the 28 pages. And it's, again, HR14.org. And with that, thank you so much, Don, for having me on today.
Les Jamison, thank you very much. Again, give us the website.
Yeah, it's HR14.org.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening. We'll